Okay, so we'll try to do an overview of the topic. It's really three separate topics that are relevant to this question of poskening for yourself, or at least three main topics. So I'll try to survey it. I'd like to do it in 1 week because you never know what's going to happen week to week. Okay, but as far as I can tell, the question of whether you can posken for yourself has three factors. Okay, it's three separate topics. So one is the question of what makes someone capable of being a posek, right? Period, right? Meaning, what makes someone? How much do you have to know? What skills you have to have, and things like that. That's the question of what makes you a posek, right? Now that's obviously, you can't get to the question of poskening for yourself until you've dealt with the question of can you posken? Are you qualified to issue halachic rulings? But that's the first question. Once you deal with that question, there are two factors that would limit you from poskening for yourself or poskening in a given instance, even if in theory you are qualified to posken in general. Okay, that sounds a little bit confusing, so let me clarify. Sometimes, even people who are qualified to poskin are limited in given circumstances from issuing halachic rulings because of the presence of a more qualified posek. Right? Meaning, even if in theory you have the requisite knowledge, the classic case we'll see in just a minute being, let's say, your teacher were present. Right, your main teacher for the moment, let's say, and make it easy, right? Your Rebbe Muvhok, whoever taught you the majority of your Torah, how to poskin, however you want to define it, if that person was present, so then there are certain limitations placed in your ability, not to poskin in general, but to poskin in that context. The parameters of that limitation are more expansive than simply your Rebbe being present in the room. And therefore, it's a second factor that you have to take into account when you're thinking about poskening. That's factor two. And factor three is, let's say you're allowed to posken. Let's say there's nobody else more qualified to posken. How are you doing, John? When you're poskening for yourself, there's a third problem, which is bias. Right? Yeah, it's conflict of interest, of bias, right? Meaning, even if you're qualified, if it's not that there's a limit in terms of what you're knowledgeable enough to do, skilled enough to do, and the like, it could be that you're not allowed to poskin for yourself because you have a vested interest in the answer, right? And maybe that is going to sway your opinion in a way that's not reliable. Now, that might depend on the question. For many people, you'd be looking for a kula. That's not always true. Sometimes you're looking for a humra, right? Sometimes people are not willing to when they're involved, they're overly cautious. But those, as I can tell, are the three topics that really have to be tackled if you want to figure out can you poskin for yourself, right? So one is, what qualifications you need to poskin in general? Two is, are there things that would limit you from poskining, particular context that would prevent you from poskining even if you're fully qualified? That's in general, not just for yourself. And then the third is, even if none of those problems exist, because you're fully qualified and there's no external forces limiting your ability in this context, the third question is, is there a unique problem to poskin for yourself? Which obviously means that even if you're more qualified, let's say, than the person that you're going to consult with, if you think that bias is a problem, it might be that you're not allowed to poskin for yourself, even if you're more qualified than the posek you would otherwise turn to. Right? So if Avigail is the number one expert in a given halachic topic, but the question is relevant to her, if you think bias is a problem, then right, she might still have to turn to a lesser posek, or poseket, I guess. I don't know. I don't even know when you're speaking English, right? If you're like, do the gendered nouns carry over to English? I have no idea.
Hebrew is a gendered language.
Well, Hebrew is a gendered language, yes.
Non-binary.
English.
Hebrew project. I want them to get it wrong.
What?
There's a non-binary Hebrew project through Keshet. That's really cool. And they're like adding a third option of like non-gendered languages. Really cool.
Good luck. People are confused enough by
Hebrew, yes.
By Hebrew. I don't think.
Funny.
Well, in plural, modern Hebrew has gotten rid of much of it, right? Meaning, in modern Hebrew, in plural, they've gotten rid of a lot of the feminine plural, you know, especially like feminine plural future, right? Like the tomarnas and things like that, you know. Yeah, some of it they've left. But in, like, classic biblical Hebrew, obviously, you have all that very confusing stuff.
Yeah, with all that.
Yeah, we all learned it at some point, and then, and you know, Americans who make Aliyah and care about Hebrew are often pedantic about these things, and Israelis are like, oh, whatever, right?
Americans are
impressive. Yes, but otherwise, Israelis are much, much looser with grammar. Which, to be fair, is usually true, right? People who are like native speakers, they don't feel the same pressure. Americans also, right? How much do we care about grammar when we speak English? I mean, some people do.
I care about using they as a singular pronoun. That's the only thing I've ever.
Yeah, but not anymore. Now that's become acceptable. They as a singular pronoun has become acceptable now.
Unless you're taking the
SATs. They're not taking the SATs, but they becoming they. I mean, the combination of people not caring about grammar and it being a safe alternative for many people to trying to figure out what gender you're supposed to use, so just use they, and then whatever, it's just they. Yeah. The point of all that was that posseket, I guess, carries over from the Hebrew, but I'm not really sure. Posek, fine, posek.
We understand
that. We've been through this. We've done this already. I mean, I don't know if we've done the topic, but my opinion on it has been made clear, so I don't need to reiterate it, I think. Okay, so let's take these three issues. So the first, let me quickly just get the kavod one, not in the order that I said, but let's get the kavod one out of the way, because this is, I think, the least central, right? Meaning, it's just, if you have someone who's fully qualified, sometimes they're just limited by virtue of context. So I just gave you a summary here in Shulchan Aruch where you see that this is part of a series of halachot about kavod harav. Shulchan Aruch says, chayav adam b'chavod rabo, v'yirato yotem rishel aviv, you have to honor your teacher more than your parent, kol acholek al rov b'cholek al shechina. And anyone who argues with his teacher, it's like he argues with the divine presence. And then in Sif Gimel, you get Ezu Cholek al Rabbo. What does it mean to argue? Kol shekovelo midrash v'yoshev v'doreish umelamei jelo b'rishut Rabbo. That's someone who establishes a yeshiva to teach, to spread Torah, to paskin, without permission from his Rebbe. V'rabbo kayam. And his teacher is alive. Again, we haven't yet qualified Rav, but whatever Rav is, to set up a yeshiva, to basically become your own Rosh Yeshiva without getting permission from your Rebbe, let's assume for the moment your main Rebbe, that even if your Rebbe isn't present, but is somewhere, is alive, that is a lack of kavod. But the Ramah qualifies of a mutar lachok is a psak ohara. Right? The reason that we interpret it this way is because there is no problem with arguing on a specific halachic position issued by your teacher. As long as you have proof that the halacha is in accordance with you. Sif Dalid then moves specifically to the context of psak, that asur la'adam lahoro lefnei rabo le'olam, you're never allowed to paskin in front of your Rebbe. And if you paskin in front of your Rebbe, you are liable to the death penalty. And the Rama writes, and permission only works if you are three parsa away from your Rebbe. But if you're in close proximity, so then imu rabo muvak, if it's your, not just a teacher, but your teach, the, your main teacher. So then, if you're in close proximity of three parsa, then even permission won't help, right? You're supposed to defer to your teacher's position. Now, this halacha is pretty limited for many reasons. First of all, as we just saw, it's limited to, it can be waived by getting permission, at least outside of three parsa. But the in Siv Zayin, you get more limitations. The lo mikri hora'a, ela bishamora masa shabalafanav. Psak means an actual case that came before you. That otherwise it's not psak. Right? So if you're giving a halachic shiur and saying, this is my halachic position, that's not psak. Right? That doesn't require respect. That, right? What's limiting is actually issuing a particular halachic ruling on a specific case that came to you. That is a but if your students say, what do you think the halacha is, in theory, right? Not asking you on a specific case. So you're allowed to tell them your opinion. Right, so this already, very right, this halacha clearly exists, but it's quite limited, meaning it doesn't stop you from weighing in on halachic issues. It limits you from being the actual person who issues a psak if your Rebbe is present, however we understand present. Right, so it's pretty limited. Furthermore, and this is something I think I've mentioned many times throughout the year, is that most halachic questions are not called psak. Right? What does something need to be a psak? New. Right? And as you get here, Shulchan Aruch summarizes, lo mikri hora'al v'davar shish bo chidush la'sho'el. In order for it to be a psak, it must be something new to the person asking the question. Something is obvious, meaning someone asks you basic kosher question, basic tefillah question, right? Yeah. Most, right? And 90% of, not a 90%, many shilas that come to post-game are really variations on I drop my spoon in dot, 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 right? Whatever the case may be. Yes. Yes, exactly. I dropped my spoon. Right, there's this very this passage. One of my teachers loved quoting. There's a passage in Yosef Ibn Kaspi. There's one. You know Ibn Kaspi. So Ibn Kaspi is one of these like uber rationalist Maimonidean commentaries on the Torah, medieval. And at some point he has a piece where he talks about how he had a spoon shaila. Right, and he was he didn't know the answer because, like, he was a first-rate philosopher, but not a posek, right? And therefore, the inzad of Hilchos Kasher didn't really know, so he had to ask his, like, local shul rabbi, and he found himself very offended by this because here he was this great philosopher, and I have to ask that, you know,
that bum,
and at some point, you know, he's like, but I comfort something like I comforted myself because I said he knows spoons, but I know God. Right, something like that. Right, like, right. So, but yes, this is like the, right, this is like the basis of many.
He knows spoons, but I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. That was, I think, my teacher's like paraphrase, but it says something basically like that. But yeah, most of those shilas, you know, you can poskin, and to be fair, most shilas are like that. Right, most shilas you get are not new; they're variations on a theme. Right, and that, you know, they're like variations of kashrus, they're, you know, they're even like, you know, I know for like most of the questions that Ora gets in Nida are like not questions. They're just because people don't know halacha, right? They're basic clarification questions. Right? So this is true of most things, right? Most topics. Not always. Right? Obviously, there are actual challenges people ask, but a lot of what people ask is not. Yes, and often it's like, that's white. Yes, that's fine. Right? Yeah, it's, you know, you'd be surprised. But, what? Yeah, well, we don't have an official rabbi in Dagon, so, you know, between Ora being a Yoetzet and the person who lives immediately behind me being the other person that they would ask. Yes, they either end up at our house or sometimes end up at our house for consultation, you know, or vice versa. Yeah. But yeah, most neither Shilas also are not really Shilas. I remember once in Toronto I got a Shila. It was really not a Shila at all. It was someone came to me with a Shila, with a something to look at, and he was colorblind. So he literally had, like, it wasn't like a Shila, he just couldn't see it. So, like, there was, you know, I was like, you know, some of those things are really... What?
That's bad. No, it's not. It makes sense. Like, no,
yeah.
Like, it's a, like being colorblind every single time. Just.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not as bad as being a Nida Posek and being colorblind. That's a real problem. But like,
yeah.
No, but like Ora's teacher in GPAS, who's like a major Nida Posek, he is colorblind. So like, he does, because a lot of Nida Shilas are more theory, right? Not all Shilas are Marot. So you're right, Marot he can't do. Marot he can't do. The way he taught Marot was he would be like, here's a bunch of Marot, right? Willig told me this is Mutter, right? Willig said this all, I know what I'm looking at, right? Yeah.
That's so good. Like, why Willig told me this is Mutter? I can't see any difference.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
Yeah, look, I know another case where there was like a rabbi out of town, he was the only rabbi around, and he was colorblind. So then the only way to do it was you had to like FedEx the Shilas to...
That's
so
terrible.
I know, it's, you know, it's a problem.
Oh,
it's, yeah,
God.
It's a problem. Yeah.
Shiloh.
Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Well.
Fine. The point is, in order for it to be a Shiloh, it needs to be something new. Although, what you do, actually, Shiloh goes something obvious. Kigon, notin dam lifgam. And what's his example? Yeah, basic kosher Shilohs. Like? Yes, and it was cold. Oh no. What will I ever do?
That is exactly the case that happened.
You guys freaked me out. I thought it was fine.
It's usually fine. It's very rare.
You shouldn't put it in.
First of all, most kosher Shilas.
I didn't put it in on purpose.
Yes, you did. You
first of all, most kosher
Shilas
are obvious. Second of all, most kosher Shilas are mutter. Right? It's very rare. Right? Every so often you get a Shilas that's usher, but it's not so common. Once Ara got a question from a friend of hers where when I heard it, I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's an actual case in Shulchan Aruch, which never happens. And I asked Rai Willig, he's like, yeah, in like 50 years of poskening, I've never gotten the actual case in Shulchan Aruch. But it was like, you know, a Ben Yomo meat spoon, like meat spatula that was then used to make a cheese omelet in one of those mini egg pans. You know what I'm talking about? The ones that are just enough size, like one or two eggs. And therefore, the spatula is big at Ben Yomo, the pan is small, and it actually managed to trafe up the egg and the pot. Like, that never happens. That never happens. The answer is almost always mutter, right? But that was usher. That was actually, you had to kosher it. It was amazing. It was like, but that usually
I
doesn't happen.
I think the guy's probably so amazed that he managed to do that one thing that...
It's very hard. It's very hard because most of the Shilas you get are, I dropped my cold spoon, in my dairy spoon, into my fleishig sink. And you're like, and? What do I do? Do I kosher it? No. You rinse it in hot water 3 times, stick it in the flour pot? No. You just make sure there's no meat on it. That's it. There's nothing to do. You're kidding me. No, I'm not kidding you. That's really all there is to it. You know, that's how most Shilas go. What? Well, that's just how kosher Shilas go, you know. Then there's the opposite problem of, this is obviously usher. No, it can't be. My grandmother did it. No, I'm telling you it's usher, right? There's no way that that's mutter. You cannot take water to get a stain off of your shirt on Shabbos. There's no heter. There's no way of being mutter that. That's an isur d'oraisa, you know. Yeah, so most Shilas are like that.
Can you, like, unless then you get, like, much of powder on your shirt, can you, like, brush off, or is that also...
Yes, you can brush it off. If it comes up easily, for sure. If it doesn't come up easily, then you're getting into slightly...
So you can't, no water, but more water?
Like, no water. If it's, like, dirt gets on, you can... Then it's, if it's bright, if it lightly brushes off, then it's definitely fine. Yeah. But liquid, no. You don't take water. You can never take water. Like, people...
Let's say I get, like, something... Like,
you get, like grape juice, wine on your shirt.
But can I, like, soak it up, or is that also not allowed?
Not like clean it off, just like put dab a towel on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, as long as you're not squeezing it out, like it.
Okay, cool.
you, like, you can't clean it, but, like, you know, put it, like, putting down a towel or something like that, you can do.
That's not even your job, is answering questions like that.
Yes, yes, definitely. Yeah.
Thank you.
So he says, Kigon, Nathan Al-Gamal, Levatel Yisra B'Shishim, Chayetze Be'elam Mitzah. And then he says, V'yesh Mishikatav, Shikot Gadu B'Sfarim. Some expand this even more and say, it's not just something which is totally obvious, but even anything that's found in a book, you also can paskin. Mipizkei Ha'Gaonim, Yechol HaRabi Me'rabo, Raglo Yirei Davar Milibo. The only thing you can't do is paskin something of your own accord. But even if something is not obvious, but you're just paskin saying, look, it's in the Mishneh Berurah, it's in the Aruch HaShulchan, it's in this English art school book, that's fine. And that's not psak either. Lo yismach harei otav l'damot milto, l'milto me'asmo. The next halacha, l'afrushe me'isura. To stop people from violating an isser, you also don't need permission. Kigon, shiro adam shover avirah mibnei sheni yodeh shu asur. Like, you see someone doing something, and you stop them, because it's forbidden. O mibnei rasha'ata, or they know it's asur, and they're evil, and you want to yell at them, that's also fine. Mutar lahafrisho v'loma lo shu asur. You can say, asur, if nei rabo, even if your Rebbe is there. Shebechol makom shish chol Hashem in cholkin kavod l'rab. Because now there's chol Hashem, there's no room for honor to your Rebbe. So, all of these formulations are coming down to kavod, but if I asked you more precisely, right, this question of kavon really has two elements to it, right? What would that be, right? What do I mean there are two elements here? Right, meaning there's sort of two things hidden there. Right. One is that sometimes you're qualified to paskin, but you can't because of honor. But in order for the honor things to settle in, what does Shulchan Aruch make it very clear? Yeah, that's be psak. And so really, 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 the first question you have to ask when you're dealing with psak is something psak? Right? When people say, can they paskin for themselves, you have to be more precise because you learn from the case of kavod, right, from the case of all these limitations because of respect, is that not everything that is a halachic question is even qualified as psak, right? So really, while at first glance the question of kavod sounds like sort of the most extraneous, right, because it's really saying, look, you can paskin, you're totally qualified, you can paskin for yourself, that's not a problem, it's just that sometimes you have certain limitations, because your Rebbe is present, even that isn't true if what you're talking about doesn't qualify as psak. Which means that besides for the kavod point, in general, when people say, you know, maybe we won't do this in 1 week, we'll end up brushing if we do it in 1 week, but that's okay. A lot of times when people ask, can I paskin for myself, the first thing you got to figure out is, what do you mean? Do you really mean paskin? Right? Do you really mean paskin? Right? And the chances are that most of the time the answer is no, it's not really what you mean. Right? What you mean is, do I really have to go back to my teacher every time my dairy spoon falls in my fleshic sink? And the answer is, please don't. Please, right, get the halakha down and stop asking. Right? It would make everybody's lives easier, yours, ours, everybody's. Right? It's enough. Right? We're very happy for people to know the halakha. Sometimes they get confusing, and then you can ask. But many of these shilas are not questions. So the first question and a half, let's say, that you have to ask is this even a shila? I mean, is this a real question? Is it a real question that qualifies as psak? Once you deal with that, so then the extraneous kavod questions come in. But the truth is that none of the psak questions really even begin to be an issue until you're talking about an actual shaila, right? So some of the things we've talked about this year are actual shailas, right? Like, sure, electricity issues are actual shailas because, as we saw, nobody knows what to do with electricity on Shabbos, and definitely not on Yom Tov. No one has any idea what to do. So that's an actual shaila. So yeah, there, in order to paskin, I think you would have to be, that's definitely a question. So That's called psak. Then you got to figure in the, what makes you qualified to baske. But many of the questions that you're going to deal with are not like that. You know, I don't know which questions, you know, Avigail has that drive her crazy, that she doesn't like the way other people are poskening it, or she doesn't feel like she needs to ask other people, right? But the chances are that at least some of them are things that just don't reach this level. Correct. There are things that are disputes, and even there, though, I wonder, right? Meaning, when Shulchan Aruch brings the position that if something is written in the Piskei HaGeonim, right, he's not saying that it's not a machloket. He's just saying you're not posking of your own accord, right? That there's still a difference between choosing an opinion, right? Definitely, let's say, you know, I mean, this could get messy because you might want to distinguish between multiple opinions that are all within the realm of accepted opinion and things that are really, really, like, unclear, right? Like, electricity on Shabbos is so unclear, right? Like, it's not like, sure, there are a lot of opinions, but it's not like there's a set group, and it's, you know, people are constantly reassessing it. Like, it's really a live shayla. There's certain shaylas that even when there's multiple questions, right, multiple opinions, it's not really multiple opinions, right? I mean, that came out wrong. It's not really, like, it's not a live question, in the sense that people aren't, like, reassessing it. It's just constantly, do I paskin like the Mishnah Berurah, or do I paskin like the Aruch HaShulchan? Do I paskin like the Mishnah Berurah, do I paskin like the Aruch HaShulchan? Right? Like, basically, everyone knows, like, some people paskin like the Mishnah Berurah, some people paskin like the Aruch HaShulchan. Right? That's still, I think, a lesser level psak question than electricity on Shabbos, where even if you can list all the opinions, it's live, it's being reassessed, as opposed to certain things where it's like, you know, there's been two opinions on this for hundreds of years, and the main achronim basically divide. And, like, if you do it this way, people will say, okay. If you do it that way, people will say, okay. Right?
Can you be the one to decide that for yourself, or
yes? So it sounds like in Shulchan Aruch, right, that at some level you can, right? He just says, lo yismach harayat ev l'damot milto milto mayatzmo, right? In the Yesho Omrim, right? This is already the Yesh Misha Katav, right? This is less obvious, right? He's saying, if it's an open and shut question, then it's definitely fine. When he adds the Yesh Misha Katav, it sounds like, yeah, even if something is potentially a machloket, but, like, you're not posking based on yourself. It's like, you know, like, certain people I know that their default, even their Rebbeim's default, is just, when in doubt on Shabbos, I follow Shmir Shabbos Gilchasa. Right? So it doesn't mean there isn't a machloket, but you're not really posking yourself. Right? It's like, you know that, like, the Derech and Psach that you've learned is that in most circumstances, it's a safe bet to go to Shomel Zalman, even if there's a machlokes, right? So that's, you're right, that's higher stakes than something that's not a machloket at all, but it's lower stakes than something that's a real open machloket, right? So yeah, I mean, I think that takes a little, and that I think that's why Shulchan Aruch said, yesh misha katav, right? Just because something's in books doesn't mean it's not a psak, but it also is less of a psak. Right? I think this is true, right? When people issue new psakim, right? So, like, a lot of the shaylas that came up during COVID, right? These were shaylas that were different. So there, people were, like, celebrating, you know, how much work was going into these questions, you know, and things like that. But, you know, if someone writes a long and very erudite tshuva about why they decided that they really paskin like they were a chasholchan and not the Mishnah Berurah, most people will be like, I mean, I'm very glad you know the sugya, but, like, no one's giving shir on that. Right, no one's like saying, "Aha! Look at this phenomenally creative tshuva where this person gives yet another defense for the Aruch HaShulchan over the Mishnah Berurah." Like, it's a lower level, it's a lower stakes psak, and I think that's why for tomorrow that's a yesh misha katav. Right, if you're inventing a psak that's clearly, or you're dealing with a new issue that's clearly psak, but deciding to paskin the Mishnah Berurah versus the Aruch HaShulchan is like lower stakes psak. So again, the question of whether you have to ask your rav. Now we haven't. See, right, I sort of put this at the beginning, right, both because in a certain sense it's the smallest topic, but it's also the most important topic in terms of sharpening what we're even asking, right? Meaning the kavod thing itself is pretty narrow. But but what is revealed in the kavod issue is the fact that a lot of shaylas are not shaylas. At this stage in the shir, what I'm comfortable saying, though we'll qualify it obviously, is that it takes a lot less expertise to be able to weigh in among accepted positions and pick one than it does to weigh in on a new shaila where the application has not yet been articulated. Right? It takes less But that doesn't mean it doesn't. Now, you're right. That doesn't mean it takes no expertise, right? Meaning some people are not really capable of even assessing that, right? They don't even understand. Yeah, like they don't even understand the right Mishnah Berurah Archa Sholchan. They don't quite internalize what's going on. Even the English books, they get confused. Right. And, you know, and we know the different books are written for different types of people, you know, because people understand. I mean, you know, I showed you the insulting version of it before, right? Over there, the pink and gold book over there drives me nuts. I don't think you were there.
Oh, the Nida one?
Yeah, the Nida one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the article Nida one, which is one of my least. I like the green one, which is the one for men, which has footnotes, but it was reprinted for women instead of academic looking in pink and gold with no footnotes. So yes, that look on your face is exactly the look on my face the first time I came across it. What? It is a aesthetically beautiful looking book. It's nice pink and gold. You are correct.
Women would want to read it.
As society wants women to. That book represents the society wants from men versus women, which is.
So you're. Right, so Tveret's saying the ideal would be a footnoted Nida book in pink and gold.
Right.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with the pink and gold. You want to print it in pink and gold because it's a hit. Like, I don't care. Yeah, I have no problem with that. Right? Look, people want to put books on their shelves. It decorates their room. So fine, you want it to look nice. You like pink and gold. It matches with the color scheme in your room. Fine, like, you know, that's fine. I don't. What?
Yeah.
Put the pink and gold cover on the green. It's still there, right? It's like, I saw it here 2 weeks ago.
Is it the green one or down? Green one's down there.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
It's Monday. Is it pink? No, it's
one of the guys. Gold on gold. Yeah.
Gold. The men's one. And the women's one. She's right. This is so sad. No. This is like, wait. Next week is the last week of classes?
It is.
Next, what?
Can you give me a book for the
Schrager? Can you give me a book for the Schrager? Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Wait, we don't have class until the
31st.
I mean,
30th?
What?
Yeah. Now, there is one important qualification here, which I do think is very important, and that is what you get here in Sif Yud Bet. For Sif Yud Bet, Shulchan Aruch says, "In bnei beito shel tamid hitzrachu lahorav v'sha'ulo lo yoreh lahem b'makom rabo." Even Shulchan Aruch rules that even if your own family requires psak, you shouldn't paskin if your rebbe is present. Okay. Now that's interesting. Now this is where we transition. This is interesting because what is the hava mina that that's not true? Right? What's the logic that that's not true?
I don't understand why Mr. Bill said it. Like, if you're not supposed to pop when your rebbe is present, then why would it matter who you're talking?
Good. So what's the hava mina slash? It's actually Shita and Rishonim. But what's the? But why? So, and this is why it's important. Why is that? Why would someone have a hava mina like that? Why would you think that?
Because your kids are like supposed to be listening to you.
Meaning?
Authority to them.
Right. Meaning, it might not be right. I don't know if it's much as authority. You could say it's authority, but also even more than that, it's just at some level. Right, it might not be as much of an affront to someone, right, to your Rebbe, if it's one thing to paskin for the community. It's another thing to paskin for your family. Like, that's a private question. So you might have thought that even these limitations on tzach only apply when you're acting as a public figure. But as a private person, there seems to be at least a hava mina that there's a less of a demand, right? That there is lower, right? We lower the bar because if it relates to your family, then you have the rights. Now, Shulchan Aruch rejects it. But we'll see. First of all, it's not clear that everyone agrees. Furthermore, if you really want to be medayik, there's the Aruch HaShulchan is going to note that there is one ambiguity left by Shulchan Aruch. And that is, you can't paskin for your family, but what might you be able to do? Paskin for yourself. Meaning, there could have been a hava amina that halachic shailas within your family are have lower standards of psak because maybe they're private affairs rather than a public issue. Kamash Malan, maybe we don't paskin that way. But maybe the theory maintains, and therefore paskining for yourself might actually have lower standards. Meaning you might be allowed to make decisions for yourself even when you can't make decisions for other people. Right, so if you skip here to Rabbeinu Yerucham, this is where it comes from. Rabbeinu Yerucham quotes the Rosh, Ki yesh leistapek in b'nei beito shel tamid, hu tzirchu lo hor'av sh'alu im mutar, kamo she'amaren al bidikat sakin la'atzmo. When Omar delo dami hidavka sakin she'eno lechvado shel chacham, ubechi ha'egav namachal ha'chacham shel odrich et ha'tamid lavo et lo, aval lehorav hilo atzmo asur b'makom rav. So here's the question. The Gemara says that when you have a shechita knife, you're supposed to show it to the local rabbi. But if it's your own shechita knife, you can look at it yourself. Right? If you're a posek, even if your rabbi is there, you can look at it yourself. So Yerucham quotes the Safek and says, maybe that's only by knives, because there it's not really a psak question. It's like a kavod. Right? The rabbi is in charge of local shechita, essentially. So it's out of respect. You defer to him. It's a unique kavod. And maybe in that case, you know, you don't usurp the public role from your teacher, but in your own house, if you're shechting, you don't have to schlep to your Rebbe's house to show him the knife. Like, that's not lack of respect to just, you know, do your own thing. But maybe psak requires more of a public, right? Even when you're poskening a shalit for your family, that's still more of an affront because, you know, you're taking a halachic stand, because here we're talking about actual psak. We're talking about something that qualifies as psak. Rabbi Yerucham says, "Vada machrat la'asor." He wants to say that it is forbidden. He weighs in on the side that it is forbidden. However, if you look at several of the achronim, they're not as sure about paskening for herself. And remember, this is a psak that qualifies as a psak, meaning we've now gotten through all the other things. It's not just lafrusha misura, and it's not mefurish, right? It's something that's a psak that otherwise would be forbidden for you to pasken in front of your teacher. And even there, we lower the requirements if it's for you. So you look at Shevet Alevi, who quotes it, says, "Inyan lehorot latzmo, I am the Gilin Marsha, b'shem Arachayim HaKadosh, Parashat Shmini, Shinistapek Bezeh." Said the Orachayim al HaTorah had a suffix about this. Ibra Matsati Labal Orachayim Atzmo, or the Sefer Rishon LeZion, but in his Perush on Shas, the Orachayim's Perush on Shas, the Rishon LeZion, Pshitale Demutar Lahorot Latzmo, Dein Begeda Hora, Rashe More Lezulat. Because something is only a psak if you paskin for others. And if you skip to 6, which is what he's quoting, now, in the actual region, Letzion, I'm not as convinced, right, that he says the Shevet Alevi says he does. But he takes it as a given that he can. If you look at the Pitchei Tshuva, and he notes that Chavos Yair argued even on Shulchan Aruch. And he says, Kadam Rav Shuda Cholarot Isra Veheter Shabala Adam B'toch Beito Shari Laharot Im Barachihu. So as long as you're a posek, anything that's in your own house, you think you can Baskin Rafi Makam Rabo. And he thinks that when the Shochar limits it, right, sorry, the Pitzchei Tshuva says, Shocharach doesn't agree with this, right, three lines down, V'tema Shalohevi Kal Divrei HaTorah Mechaber V'chah, and the Gold Divrei HaRosh. It's Tzarchi Yon Kei, right, so you see, though, that it's not even agreed upon, like Shocharach says it, but there are Achronim, like the Chavad Yair, who disagree. And as the Shevet HaLevi notes, and maybe that's what the Rishon LeZion is saying, when it comes to you, maybe it's obvious you can paskin for yourself. Again, you have to be qualified. The Urcha Sholchan quotes this as well. Ava la'atzmo mutar la'arot v'la'asot. Migil o'ra'av adin barur tlo. D'chem deno morel acherim ein zeher der chavod l'rabo. Right, since you're paskin for yourself, there isn't a lack of honor. So, what we learn from this case of honor, right, first of all, is that yes, there are extraneous things that might limit you in very limited circumstances from paskening. But more importantly, what we learn is that most things that are halachic questions are not really halachic questions. Right? And in order to figure out whether you can pasken for yourself, the first question you have to ask is something a psak at all? If it's not a psak, so then you're allowed to pasken, and that might even include certain things as teferet notes where it's not 100% clear what the answer is. It still might not be a psak if you're not initiating, right, this halachic discussion, right? And rather you're just sort of weighing in on a bunch of generally accepted positions that are in the discourse. Furthermore, even within the respect issues, we limit it that it might only be when you're taking on a public persona. According to Chavis Yair, it doesn't even apply if you're posking for people in your family. And according to Chasholchan Shevet HaLevi, it definitely doesn't apply if you're posking for yourself. Now, obviously, that doesn't lower the qualifications question, right? Meaning, everyone agrees that you have to be qualified to make a decision on whatever it is you're making a decision about. But what that does mean is that you are, that there might be more flexibility when you're making decisions for yourself than when you're making decisions for others. So if Abigail's question is not just, when can I go out and write my first Sefer of Tshuvot, but when can I decide that I want to do this because this makes sense to me in the sugya, those are very, very different. One of those is a much easier thing to do than the other. One of them takes is less demanding in terms of its requirements. Okay? So that's one and a half or two questions that you need to deal with when you are poskening. Okay. But let's assume that what you're dealing with is, in fact, a halachic shaila, and you don't now have the external limitation of your teacher being present. Fine. In that sense, the most important question you then have to turn to is, well, what qualifies you as a posek? So, what qualifies someone as a posek? What makes someone a posek? What qualities? Knowledge. What does knowledge mean?
You need to have a background in the cases that they're supposed to be deciding.
Okay. Knowledge of the case law.
Information.
Okay. Information. Good. Okay. What else do you need?
Knowledge of the world and the ability to apply it.
Okay, good. You're going to need the ability to apply. Good. What else? Okay, common sense. But really, what are you saying? What do you need? Meaning it's not just about facts. It's about... Yeah, you need insight. You need the ability to discern. Right? So the Gemara has a phrase, which basically everything comes back to understanding this phrase. The Gemara in the beginning of Huriot, when dealing with what type of posek is considered ra'ui lahora, right, is worthy of poskening, which has certain relevance in the sugya problem, dav shel tzibor, right, the karban that's brought on behalf of the Sanhedrin, if they, or by the Sanhedrin if they make a mistake in psak. So the Gemara says, Yad Echem and Shetau, Tamin Vira Ilahara. So Tarte Lamale, Amarava, Itzrich, Salka Daita Hamina, I might have thought that Hani Mile Gamir Visavir, Aval Gamir Vilosavir Lo. I might have thought that you only allowed a paskin if you're Gamir. What's Gamir? So it means you know things. Stuff. You know stuff. And Savir. You have analyzed stuff. Right? Look at Rashi in 8. Gamir, Lamada Davar. Gamir means you learned it. Savir is Mevin Davar Mitoch Davar. You need to know stuff and know how to analyze. So I might have thought that you're not a postake if you don't know how to analyze. Kamash 1, you just need knowledge. You don't need the ability to analyze. The Gemara says, really? Amar le Abaye leho ra'ah. You just said that the person is qualified to paskin. You cannot say someone is qualified to paskin if he doesn't know what to do with the information at hand. Gamir visavir mashma. Psak requires two main factors. Gamir visavir. Knowledge and analytical abilities. So Amar le, you're right. Ana hachi koemna. You're right. That's what I'm saying. Ima hi. Have amina hanimile gamir visavir aval gamir velo savir lo tana roila ram mishneter afil gamir velo savir savir velo gamir. He said, you're right. In general, you're right. For the purposes of parham devershel tibor, figuring out whether there was anybody who was knowledgeable enough to realize that there was a mistake being made, and nevertheless follow the mistake, so we take the lower standard of gamir or savir, meaning, if someone is knowledgeable and therefore realizes the bin is making a mistake, even if they aren't great analytically, but just from their knowledge, their book knowledge, they are aware that a mistake is being made. Or alternatively, they don't know everything, but their analytical abilities are enough that they realize that something is off. So in the case of Parham Davar Shel Tzibur, both of those count to say that there was someone here who should have known better. But you're right. There, it's a negative requirement of posek, meaning someone who's capable of understanding that a mistake happened. But in terms of actually ra'ui laho ra'a, someone who's capable of weighing in and saying, this is what you should do, the basic qualifications come down to those two words, right? Real psak requires gamir v'savir, knowledge and the ability to analyze. Okay? Does that make sense? Right, that makes sense, right? Meaning, if I had to sort of boil it down, right, those are the two main things that I would need. But yes, the second, 2.5 would be the, not just the, right, not just the ability to analyze halachic material, but also the ability to weigh in on the reality. But that still goes under the realm of analysis. The Rambam, the next source, I think, is a good summary of this Metziut requirement. And that's what he says, that he's talking about Sanhedrin, but at a certain level, it's true of all poskim. When the Rambam says, "Ein ma'amidin b'Sanhedrin ben b'gdola ben b'ktana," you don't establish on the Sanhedrin, any Beis Din. Ela anashim chachamim u'nivonim, people have to be smart and insightful. Muflagin b'chokhman ha-Torah ba'alei de'a miruba, they know a lot of Torah. Yodim k'tzad mishar chokhmot, but they also have to know some other wisdoms. Kagon, rifuot, they have to know some medicine, v'cheshbon, and mathematics, or arithmetic at least, utkufot, umazalot, right? Astronomy, v'stagninot, v'darkei avonim, v'kosmim, v'chashvim, first Sanhedrin, you also need to know magic and the ways of Avodah Zarah, because you can't judge if someone worships Avodah Zarah if you don't know the normal way of worshiping and things like that. V'chayot be'elu k'deshi yodin ladun otam, because when you judge, you need to know what you're talking about. And then he says, at least for Sanhedrin, you also need to have Yichud. That's fine. Okay. And then the Rambam, again, in number 10, is talking about Sanhedrin, but I think what he says is often lost in the modern discourse, and I think at a certain level it's true of all Psak. And that is, and I'm going to make this very clear, because this is really important, and it's going to make me unpopular. It always makes me unpopular. It makes me sound mean, right? But being nice is not enough to make someone a posek. This should be obvious, but it's not. No, I know. But do you understand how many people are offended by this? Because you have, see, here maybe not, but how many people, when you say your rabbi is a wonderful rabbi, and most of their job is dealing with Bikur Cholim and funerals and weddings, and they give inspiring speeches, and they are there for people when they need them, and therefore they're a wonderful rabbi.
My rabbi, my shul.
Right? But they're not a posek, right? So they don't have the right, right, to just issue a lot of positions. That doesn't make them a bad rabbi, doesn't make them a bad, I don't know, NCSY advisor, right? But it doesn't make them a posek. People will say, but, the answer is, I understand, right? But people, I didn't think actually this group would be offended, but people do get offended by this idea, right? Because people think that,
oh, how could you?
What?
How could you?
Oh, thank you. There you go. How could you? What?
Women are not.
Yeah, sorry, I thought you were
saying. Oh, no.
I was like waiting for you to say that.
No. See, but I'm glad that I have students who don't find this offensive. But there are so many people who do find this offensive.
Well, you're not going to be trusting someone to like tell me important like factors of like.
Yes.
Attitude.
Yes, exactly. Meaning, as I said to people, look, right? But I've met many people in my life. So this is not true. They're not okay with this, right? Like when you say, Why do I have to go to the posek? I go to my shul rabbi, and you say, but your shul rabbi doesn't know what he's talking about. And they say, but I love him. He's wonderful. And you say, okay, but that's not the question. This is, right? It's like if you had a doctor, right, who was really nice, but didn't know what they were doing. They were a terrible diagnostician. You would not, I mean, it might be uncomfortable to go to the expert doctor who's gruff and a bit, you know, whatever, and but like, if you had, obviously, ideally, you have someone who has good bedside manner and is a good diagnostician and, you know, a good surgeon or whatever you need. But, yeah, it doesn't happen. I'm not saying you should look, what? Yes. Now, I'm not saying the post-communism, meaning that's not what I'm saying, right? But I am saying, now, you're right. You shouldn't be offended by this because this should be obvious. And yet, some people are. But, well, that's the thing, is that, look, and this is my thing in life. I don't think everyone needs to be a posek.
Great.
As long, I know it's shocking, right? I do think that anybody who claims to be a posek has to be qualified. And if they claim to be a posek and they're not qualified, then that person should be criticized and called out for it, right? But that's when people disagree because they say, you're being mean. I'm like, I'm not being mean. If they acknowledge that they don't want to be a posek, that they want to be in the rabbinate because they want to help people who have dying relatives and they're really good at pastoral issues, then I'm okay with that, right? One of my sort of pet peeves is that because in the Jewish community we have this bizarre idea that at least for males, you are not qualified to do anything Jewish unless you have smicha, right? Plenty of people who there's no reason for them to spend 4 years understanding Shulchan Aruch when their ability to understand the Shulchan Aruch is not necessarily superb, right, end up sort of struggling through a smicha program just to have the title rabbi because otherwise people won't let them be, I don't know, a third grade rebbe. Okay, you don't need to be a massive Talmid Chacham to be a third grade rebbe. You need to know how to deal with third graders, right?
Also, why do you have to learn the Shulchan Aruch to teach them
Chumash? Yes, correct. But the problem is that we have this thing in the community. But the problem is since we don't let any male basically take any Jewish teaching job or something like that unless they're rabbi, right, they end up getting the title rabbi without really being qualified to paskin. And some people understand that, right, and therefore don't try to paskin. But some people, it gets to their head and they're like, oh, I'm rabbi now, I can paskin, right? And then when you call them out, they say you're mean. I'm really not trying to be mean, right? I'm just trying to be – what I'm saying, I think, is
–
yes, but I think this is eminently reasonable, which is, Psak is an expertise. And therefore, not everybody can do it. That's okay. That doesn't make you a bad person. It just means you're not a posig. And the Rambam, apparently, the way the Rambam phrases it, it's quite clear that he was dealing with people who couldn't quite wrap their heads around this. Because he says, Kol Sanhedrin Melech Oros Kol Hashem Midu Lem Yisrael Dayan Sheinu Hagur Meinu Chacham Bechumarat Rav Eliyahu Dayan. Anybody, Sanhedrin, king, doesn't matter, who appoints a judge who isn't a big enough Talmud Chacham to be a judge, Afal Pishu Kolo Machmadim, even if he's a really sweet, V'yesh Bo Tavor Acheron, he has many other good qualities. Harei Zeshem Midu Ovor Belo Taseg, he violates a biblical prohibition. Shenemar Lo Takiru Banim Bamishpat. Which is don't show favoritism. It goes on. It's kilo hamid maseva. So again, I don't think it's controversial, but I do think that it's important to realize that good pastoral rabbi, good teacher even, doesn't necessarily mean posig. Right? That, and I know, I use the example of a third grade teacher because, okay, like, I think most people are not offended when you say that what the skills it takes to be a good third grade rebbe, third grade teacher, don't make you a posig. But people are a bit more offended when I say, that just because you're a good lamdan doesn't mean you're a good posig, right? Then people get a little bit offended, but that's also true, right? Because if you're not used to paskening, if you're not used to halacha, right, a good svara doesn't necessarily make you a posig either, right? Meaning, psak has its own, right? You can't just, as we've talked about before, there's a difference between possibility and plausibility, but also, even at the very simple level, since we said that somewhat, that part of psak is applying it to reality, if someone only cares about, if they're just a theoretician, then they're not necessarily a good posig. That doesn't mean they're not a big talmid chacham. It doesn't mean they're not a good lamdan. But if they're not willing to do the hard work of figuring out how to apply it to reality, or they just don't think that way, then they're not going to be a good posig. Right? I mean, what the Rama makes clear is just that someone has a lot of really good qualities doesn't make them a good posig. The Rambam has this fascinating position about smicha that is even more, that is quite demanding though. The Rambam in 11, he paskens as a bais Yerushalmi, the Ravid disagrees, but okay. And he says as follows, you're allowed to give someone partial smicha, meaning you can only pasken on spoon shailas, but only if they are capable, what? Yes, but only if they are capable of poskening in Kol HaDarakula. Right, now that's a surprising position. Now it's only true, really, of original smicha. But at least in original smicha, the Rambam says, by something you show me, that to be a posig of anything, you need to be a posig of everything. Now, what's the logic to that? Now, again, it doesn't fully apply, obviously, when you're not dealing with the original smicha. It's a local halacha in the original smicha. But what's the logic behind that? Yeah.
If you're trying to pass in one area of halacha, but you only do that one area of halacha, you can't really cross-reference.
Good. So there's the... So I've heard two formulations of this in my life. One is the Rav Schechter one, right? Rav Schechter basically said what Brooke said, which was, look, not every aspect of a spoon shayla is found in Yerideya. Sometimes it's found in Bacharot. Meaning, halacha is just interconnected. So there's a very practical reason, which is sometimes you're missing something. If you don't know everything, you might just be missing something. Then there's a more fundamental reason. And this I heard from Rosenzweig when I was in high school already. He came to give a guest share at Rambam. Yeah.
Is it just that people assume that if you don't want to talk, you know everything, so you kind of need to know everything?
Oh, no, not necessarily, right? Because you could say, well, I don't know everything, right?
People don't like saying
that. Oh, yeah, no, that's true.
Okay, right, there's a problem with
yeah.
Yeah, but
so,
reality.
Yeah. Look, the practical one is definitely true. Both of the practical ones, I think, are true. Another part of it, though, is the more, what Rosenzweig said, which was more the fundamental, which is that at least when it came to smicha, smicha was more than just a knowledge of, like, a bunch of issues. When you know the entire topic, at some point, right, like, we all know this. Right, this is like Malcolm Gladwell's like 10,000-hour thing, even though it's been called into question. I won't get into that. But the theory behind it was that at some point, right, you move basically from consciously thinking about it to it being ingrained in you and you start functioning in intuition. Even if you can't necessarily explain always what you're doing, right, you're sort of running on autopilot because of you. It's become part of you. So that's the way Rav Rosenzweig understood it, was that original smicha wasn't just, I know a lot. it was, like, to be a member of the Sanhedrin, you had to be the type of person, the Torah was a part of you. You had an intuitive grasp of how the system worked. And at some point, right, even if you happen to be an expert in a certain issue, if you're missing an area of Torah, you don't have that intuitive grasp of the system as a whole. Now again, this demand is really only for the original smicha. But at some level, I think it is true that when it comes to major questions, you need that. Right? You need that. I remember once someone asking Reb Lichtenstein, and, you know, Reb Lichtenstein was famous for everything is complicated, right? Hakol Murkav, right? That was like our slogan at some point. Right? Everything is complicated. So everything has multiple sides to it. So Lichtenstein was on record as being a supporter of Yotzot Halacha, and someone asked him, can they paskin, right? And he started saying, well, they can, if they know Nida, but not every Nida Shaila is a Nida Shaila. Sometimes it's a Sveka Shaila, right? It's a question of Sveka, right? At some point, like, Ramosha, his son, and Esti stopped and said, like, what he means to say is, right, which is obvious what he was saying, right, is fundamentally, yes, if you know Nida, then you can weigh in on Nida questions. You just have to remember that not every Nida question is really a Nida question. Sometimes it's a Sveka question. That's not localized to Yotzot. That's just true of everybody, right? Meaning, some people, sometimes a spoon shayla really is a spoon shayla, right? But sometimes it's not, right?
There is no spoon.
There is no spoon. There is no, yes. Okay, usually spoon shaylas really are just spoon shaylas, but not always, right? Not always. So at some level, so on the practical level, yes. To really do psak, it might be that you need to know more than just the topic at hand. It might be that for real psak, if you want to carry over from this model and you buy what Rosenzweig said about smicha, it might be that you have to, for real psak, like first-rate psak, you want someone who is halacha is so part of them that they have an intuitive grasp of the system. I tend to be partial to that just because, you know, from my experience, good post-gim, even when they have to research, right? Meaning, I'm not saying that they don't research, right? But at some level, even when they do research, you see that, like, they already have a grasp. Sometimes the research will pan out differently than they thought, but they have, like, a general intuition of how this is going to play out because they've seen similar things, right? They just have a sense. And again, it's not just true of Torah, right? Good doctors, right? Obviously, they're going to run tests. But still, a beginner doctor, it's like they're just going to run the test. They just have a checklist, right? An expert doctor can tell you before running the tests, it's probably this or this. Like, these are the tests you have to run.
But, I'm thinking of chess.
Yeah, chess is the same way.
Yeah.
Right? They have it.
It's really frustrating at the beginning.
Right, meaning beginner chess players are, right, they don't see 20 steps ahead or 120 steps ahead. Are you an expert chess player? Yeah. This is what I think everyone, you know, this is apparently what the whole world got when they watched the Queen's Gambit, right? When they picked up chess. Because they were like, oh, that's what it looks like when you get really good. Wow, that's really fascinating. It was very good. It was very well done.
It was really well done.
It really was. What? It was very good. Yes, I agree. But I didn't really see how they were talking of doing a sequel. I'm like, I don't really understand what. It was like,
yeah.
It held together.
I think everyone was like, oh my God, a sequel, because the first one was good, and the creators were like, we never planned on making a sequel.
No, that's what
sequel.
Everyone was like, oh, this thing is going to make a sequel. No. That's not how it works.
Yes,
it's a limited series.
Yes. The sequels make more money, but they're worse, you know?
Yeah. From what I've seen, the creators are such insisting on, like, no sequel, we made this as one season.
The limited series. I like the limited series model. I really do. It's like you can flesh out a theme, a character, but you don't have to drag on forever. What?
You don't have to go overboard.
You don't have to drag on. It's like, I want to make this into a 12-season show.
Like,
so
unorthodox.
should remain as a limited series.
Is it?
Yeah.
No, I have no idea. But yeah, it's like long form television, you know, right? Not, anyway.
They also could have done a lot better.
That's what it is. Yeah.
True to the actual story.
Fine. So, okay, maybe we'll pause here. I'll just note, right, that this notion of the permission, I just want to note that modern smicha is obviously not really that smicha. What it is really what emerges here from the sugya in Sanhedrin Nafei, which is what we call Nikilat Rishut, which is you get permission to paskin from your Rebbe, which is back in the kavod camp. That's more what our modern smicha is. So our modern smicha clearly doesn't have the exact same requirements, but conceptually it does carry over to an extent. You know what? I could probably finish this quickly. I won't read it inside, but the Rimi Gash was asked. Which person he would rather have as a posek, someone who is quite familiar in the Tshuvat HaGeonim, or someone who, can someone who is, who knows the Tshuvot HaGaonim, but he never really learned how to paskin, but he's like quite well read in Tshuvot, can he paskin? And he says, look, if you have someone who is aware of the primary sources, but isn't so good at reading them, or you have someone who really knows secondary literature, if he had to prefer it, he would take the person with secondary literature, because how bad could he, right? Even if someone is not capable of really, really poskening from the Gemara down, someone like knows the Gemara but is not great at poskening, or someone knows every tshuva written by Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and Rav Avadia Yosef, even that person can't posken Gemara, like how far off, right? Meaning, how far off could he be? The reason that Tshuvat Rimi Gash is important is because what he's telling you is, even certain people who are formally not qualified to be poskim can in practice do a decent job, right? Because as we've talked about, real, real psak is coming up with your own shayla from the sources. But like a lot of questions, as Tiferet noted, are somewhere in between, right? Where it's not that it's open and shut, but it's also not your own. And the Rimi Gash is saying, look, that's not the ideal, right? I'd rather someone who, if it's something that's a new shayla, I'd rather them really go back to the Gemara. But if they can't, right, but they're fully aware of all the secondary literature, okay, you know, that's a level, and if I need to suffice with that, then I will, rather than someone who just sort of knows the, now in this particular case, he didn't like this guy, because the guy had no Yerush Shamayim, and then he says, by the way, obviously to be supposed to give Yerush Shamayim, I hope that's obvious, right, meaning, don't get someone who's knowledgeable but doesn't care about what God says, right? That's not a person you want as a posek. Fine, I think that should be pretty obvious. And the Sma has this fascinating thing, which makes this point very clear, where he says, Lehorot, the Sma actually think there's a mitzvah to write to the paskin. Under what circumstances? So he says in 13, Lehorot, dechtiv lehorot, b'nei Israel, mitzvah la'adam la'shiv la'shoel davar ra im yodeya, afil lo higil lehora. The mitzvah of paskin, even if, as you know the answer, even if you're not technically magil lahara, right? Now that shows you, just like the Rimi Gash, that even if it's not really psak, right, or you're not the best qualified, under certain circumstances, you may still have to answer. Right? If there's no one better around, right, you may still have to answer, or, right, meaning there is a mid-level where it's not technically psak, but it acts as psak, right, where you're revealing something the other person doesn't know, right? So there is a sliding scale, right? There's new shayla analyzed from the Gemara. There's something which everybody agrees to, which anybody can paskin. And then there's like this middle level where it's sort of closer to psak. It's not quite psak because you're not paskin the primary sources, but there is a decision-making going on where the standard is higher than open and shut, but lower than radical new shayla, right? And so what you see, even without getting into the exact details is that basically what you need to paskin is knowledge, ability to analyze, basic understanding of the mitzvot, ideally ability and knowledge of all the primary sources. If not possible, there are mid-levels of psak which are demanding but not that demanding. And that's what basically comes out of it. So when I say that there's a sliding scale, right, you see that emerges from the sources. And again, it's very important to figure out what you're talking about, what type of shaila is this, but there definitely is this range that's important to analyze. The last thing I'll just note on this is that there were achronim who said that under no circumstances can you paskin from Shulchan Aruch, because that's like the Gemara's critique of anyone who paskins min ha-mishnah, right, from the straightforward summary of the law without really understanding it. However, the Pitzchei Shuvah quotes several achronim who qualify that and say that might only have been before there are no sekelim, because once there were commentaries in Shulchan Aruch, even without knowing the whole sugya, you basically do get a decent survey of the various factors. Even if you don't know every Gemara and Shas, if you know how to read through the Shulchan Aruch, right, Tur Bezos and Shulchan Aruch, Shachtaz, you will probably hit most arguments. And therefore, you're not being totally irresponsible poskening based on that, because you're not just taking a summary, you're taking analysis, even if not primary. So again, you see this idea that even if someone doesn't know Kola Terakula, and they may not be the highest level posek, if they have access to Svarim like Shulchan Aruch, the Nosei Kalim, and they can deal with that and they can follow up the sources when necessary, again, is it the highest level? Maybe not. But is that poskening from the Mishnah, where you're basically taking, right, a summary of sources without understanding it, and poskening, is that bad? No. Right? There is this mid-level. So again, the second question is qualifications for posek. Technically, gamir v'savir, right? The ability to knowledge and the ability to analyze both the mesiut and the halachic material. But practically, if you're asking, can you paskin? The answer is, well, how difficult is this shayla? Where does it really fall on that spectrum? And it might be somewhere in between. It might be that area where it's more about picking positions, and you might be of, you know, you might know enough of the secondary material and have Shulchan Aruch and be able to access that. There are at least some mid-level questions you can answer, right? What you see is there is a certain sliding scale on this, where there's open and shut questions everyone can answer, first-rate psak questions that really should only go to someone who has full mastery, and then the things in the middle. Obviously, the hard question here is going to be, well, what? How do I know which shaila is which? At some level, that takes a bit of experience. Again, I'll just leave you with this idea, but one of my rebbeim, his suggestion to me, when I was sort of starting to get shailas, which I thought was very reasonable, I don't think he had a source for it, but it was, you know, a very reasonable thing, was, look, I might have mentioned this to you before, but I do think it's a reasonable thing, which is, you want to start posking your shailas, it's very simple. Have a shaila, go to the people that you trust, right? First figure out what you would answer and why. Go to the person you trust and say, is what I'm saying either right or at least reasonable? And if they say either that's what I would have said, that's right, or you know what, that follows logically, that's a reasonable psak, right? After a good number of times, right, that should be enough for you to know that this type of question, right, with this level of severity, right, this level of complication, right, the people I trust think that my skills and intuitions are up to task to weighing in on it, right? And then you move on from there, right? And I think that's a relatively fair thing. I mean, that's, you know, I think that's fair. I mean, a lot of it is, you know, get an idea of the people. I'm not telling you who you have to go to, but I'm saying the people that you trust, right, go to them and say, okay, like, this is that what I'm thinking. Does that make sense? And they say, oh, look, you know, you've gotten to the point where your knowledge and skills and analytical abilities are the point where what you said, actually, I wouldn't look at that and say that's an irresponsible psak in the sugya, right? That's a good way of telling that, according to the people that I trust, I'm at a place where I can start making decisions for myself or for other people, right? That's like a, you know, I think that's a fair piece of advice. Again, is it a formal rule? No. Is it a fair piece of advice? I don't know. I sort of followed it, right? I think it's a, you know, because to be fair, you should be a bit scared the first time you posking for yourself, right? Meaning I know I was, right? Meaning I, or when posking for other people, right? Meaning you don't want to just say, aha, I'm an expert, right? Like, no, I'm not an expert, right? People are asking me questions, right? I feel the, right, the responsibility on my shoulders if I'm going to answer for them. I want to feel comfortable that I'm doing is responsible. And again, there is a sliding scale. So it could be that you'll talk it over and say, you know, where on the scale am I right now? I think that's a reasonable way to sort of gauge where you are. I guess the last thing we'll do next week is the question of bias, right? Is even if you're qualified to paskin, is there value in going to someone else when you're the person, you're the subject of the shaila? Because obviously then there are other problems involved, but we'll do that next week.